Okay, good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday, December 21st, and you are listening to the very first podcast of Three Geek Senate. The Senate is now in session. Hi, my name is Brian J. Cano.
My name is Paul Bradford.
I'm Robert Buxar.
And tonight, we are going to be geeking out about Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Now, guys, I've been looking forward to this for the better part of the moment I heard about it.
I know.
Now, here's the thing. We've been burned by Star Wars before. We love it. We grew up with it. And the prequels left that bitter taste in our mouth. And honestly, with me, The Force Awakens, while I've seen it 15,000 times on Stars when it first came out, I was not happy. So I went into Rogue One really feeling kind of like the end of that movie fanboys going, oh, what if it sucks?
Yeah. Talking of bitter taste, that beer is still in my mouth. I cannot get rid of it.
Stop with the beer.
It's just so horrible.
Anyway, so but yeah,
I took a mouthful when he said bitter taste, and I was like, "Oh, it so is."
Oh, blue milk.
Blue milk.
Yeah, hey, talking about blue milk. I mean, at least they made the right. At least they had the blue milk in Galen Erso's house on the table when they panned into it. If you noticed that, so you noticed it was in the universe.
Here's the one of the things that I've been noticing around the internet and all the different posts and other blogs and podcasts, and a lot of them were talking about, oh, the references and the fan service was ham-handed and it was too much. And I felt just the opposite. I felt like all the little references, as opposed to The Force Awakens. Force Awakens literally hit you with member berries. Like, hey, guys, I know there's no plot, but remember this? Whereas Rogue One, it felt very organic. And if you missed it, you missed it.
And before we go too far into it, though, the first thing to happen, the first thing of any Star Wars movie that ever happens is, bum,
the crawl.
And it goes in. And then the text, right?
Yeah.
Where was that?
Yeah, that's the thing. So the
that
crawl,
left a bit
like
of
text
right at the beginning. Right
that caught me off guard a little bit, but here's the thing. So,
that's because it's not a saga. It's not one of the saga chapters.
It is. Right. It's 3.5.
We'll see. Okay, so here's the thing. It's not in the...
it could very well have been.
But so you come in and you have this playing. So that's the one thing for me. It's kind of like you don't get that satisfaction of the bah, and then hitting the crawl. But the thing is, if you watch any of the shows, see, I'm a connoisseur of going outside of the Star Wars the movies and enjoying the TV shows. Clone Wars, avid fan of the Clone Wars.
Great show.
I watched that from the beginning. Same thing. Excuse me. The Star Wars Rebels. Same way. You get a title and then it just, boom, it just goes into the show. You don't, you know, but now with the the Clone Wars, you had kind of the recap. You had the guy, you know, kind of recap what was going on leading up to the events in that episode. But you still didn't. You don't have a crawl on every episode. So the same thing with this is I kind of felt like that kind of was true to where those things were. It lets you know it's in the Star Wars universe, but at the same time, it doesn't obey the same roles as the Star Wars, the core Star Wars movies.
I mean, let's face it.
I felt like I missed that. I did. I personally, as soon as it jumped in and it went into the space scene and everything, I was like, oh, wait.
I get what you're saying.
You forgot what you know. I
definitely get what you're coming from, but I also feel that none of the crawls, as much as we love the crawls, none of them are Shakespeare. Nothing too deep has ever been said in a crawl. And for the most part, we went into the theater knowing, okay, this is a story about how we got the Death Star plans. Let's get to it.
Sure.
So we just saved ourselves 90 seconds of screen time. Let's get into the action.
Oh, okay, when I went and saw The Force Awakens, okay, I went in and you know, it did the whole boom and the music came in and everyone's like, yeah, and everyone was cheering. We didn't get that. We didn't have that atmosphere.
Because,
it didn't have
the build. It didn't have the build of the conventional movie. But the thing is, like, I felt like it was trying to do its own thing, which it was. It's touted as a Star Wars story, a story of that universe.
All right, so let's institute a little bit of process here in the Senate. So there's three of us, so the three senators who are presiding. Let's vote on this. Rogue One, the crawl, thumbs up or thumbs down, the lack of it. So, Paul.
I felt that it should have been, even if it was just, that tells me Star Wars, and that's the, and you, as a kid, you wait for that moment, so I wish it had been there.
So you give it the thumbs down.
Yeah, the fact it wasn't there gets a thumbs down.
Okay, Senator Rob, what about you?
I'm a little bit on the fence with it because I see where he's coming from. I empathize with that. I kind of missed it because I kind of felt a lack of satisfaction from the beginning of it. But at the same time, I'm not so held to that form. I mean, I am. I dig it. But at the same time, I also enjoy the way that it did it and just kind of said, this is what it is. Let's get into it. So I'm kind of wavering. I'm okay with it. I think I'm going to say I'm okay. I'm okay with the way that it was done.
I also I give it a thumbs up, not because – I mean I see where you're coming from, Paul, and I get it. But at the same time, episode one had a crawl, and 5 minutes into it, Weesa had a character we hate.
Oh, boy.
God.
So, let's get into Darth Jar Jar. Let's not go down that.
No.
Darth Jar Jar. Yeah, that was great.
Now, we were getting into the topic of callbacks to the originals, and we could just start firing them off.
But here's the thing. So you want to talk about callback. I mean, so, okay, so big comparison between the Force Awakens and Rogue One. The fact that I felt that The Force Awakens was beat for beat very much a repeat of the original Star Wars movie.
Absolutely.
Like, I was watching it, and I was in there the first showing of the movie in Louisville, you know, 7 o'clock on December, what was it, 17th? 17th. You know, the first showing, I hadn't seen anything of it. The only time that had been shown before that was, you know, to the press and the, you know, everything else. So I had no preconceived notions of what it was, and I'm watching it, and I'm just like, I feel like I'm watching the same movie, just with different characters plugged into place.
This is what I'm saying, in a comparison between the two movies, whereas we've had 30-plus years, J.J. Abrams, I loved his reboot of Star Trek. We gave him our trust, our childhood, our you know, our geek lives, and we said, here, take care of this. And I felt like he essentially, like you said, he gave us the same story, and you're going to have
he
a budget.
Played it safe.
You're going to take a Disney-sized budget and do the same movie. I could do that, and I have no money. But with Rogue One, here's the thing. It did its own thing.
It
a lot of
its
people
own
were complaining that, not a lot, but I've seen comments online that says, oh, it was just like Jedi, because at the end you have the space battle and the land battle, and I'm thinking, that's just warfare. This is what they've got to deal with, and we're not getting a repackaged story. We are in the original story. New Hope is seconds away.
Yes.
It's about to happen.
Yeah.
So this is
not
a callback. We're going back to it. We're literally going back to the moment and saying, hey.
It ends about 5 minutes before episode four, A New Hope, starts.
So good.
Yes, I love that, dude. I mean, I'm not going to say anything right now, but I don't know. Hang on. What were we saying? I've forgotten. Hang on. Oh.
Claire,
I'm using the Force on Paul right now.
God damn, that beer is really throwing me off.
I find your lack of memory disturbing, Paul.
Oh, good call.
That's just... Force Awakens, right. Hang on. The Force Awakens, right now.
Right.
The thing I felt with Force Awakens is it introduced Star Wars to the new generation. It reminded us of the other stories. Yeah, it did, because we were there, we watched the originals and we saw them, and it gave us that what we wanted. It was very much directed at the fans. It wasn't trying to recreate a story. It was basically trying to introduce a new generations to it. You know, we all loved R2. There was no way of getting around that. R2 was our droid.
Yeah.
And then they brought BB-8, and BB-8 is the droid of this millennia. It's
great, great
droid,
addition.
You know,
BB-8 was an excellent
addition. And I mean, the plot was a little, you know, it was a bit crappy. I mean, I had to find Luke and all this, and we still don't. There's still so many sort of things to be explained. Which great, let's do that. Let's do that in the next few movies, and let's not rush it, because that's what the first three did. When they went back and did the three prequels, they rushed everything.
Yeah,
you know,
it felt like they had like way more story that they were trying to get out, and they tried to cram it into this two and a half hour block, and it really was like, if they would have just let it breathe, I think they would have done a better job.
Let's talk about Rogue One specifically.
We keep wandering back
to The Force Awakens, but here's one thing it's clear. I loved the movie. I left the theater feeling like I was a kid again, and I was so enthused. I wanted to call one of you guys the minute I saw it.
Oh, I know.
But here's the only one thing that's sticking out in the back of my head that goes, you know, I could make excuses for almost everything else in the movie that needs it, except this one thing.
Yes.
Okay, now in I believe it was New Hope. I believe it's, if memory serves. Now I'm the one having memory problems. Mon Mothma said, hey, many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Yeah.
That was Jedi.
That was Jedi. Okay.
That was Jedi.
The Bothan spies. Okay. Yeah,
that was Mon Mothma in Jedi.
So that was Jedi. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so no Bothans here. Not a Bothan to speak of.
See, that's the thing. I was under the I felt the same guy.
Those furry bastards.
Same preconceived notion. And then as it went along, I was like, I actually went back and watched the movies. I was like, wait a minute, I've got for some reason that line, I've got associated with A New Hope.
Me
and it's
too.
Not, it's Jedi. I don't know why.
Hey, you've just saved the movie for me. Now it's perfect.
Yeah, it's Jedi. Because it's when they're trying to get everybody together, you know, Calrissian comes in and he's the general, and you know, they're you know, then Han comes in, and then Luke and Leia, you know, they're all there. But that's when that line is said, is Jedi.
Well, the good thing about this is that for years and years and years, all right, you take Star Wars, it follows the hero's journey, it follows that formula of heroic characters and the ascension of a hero. And we've seen this in many, many different points in literature and movies over the years, which is why it's so satisfying, because it follows that formula. Mm-hmm. What makes Rogue One great is that it makes A New Hope even greater.
Oh, it does.
Because it says, yeah, it wasn't some Imperial engineer screwing up and like they blew it up because of this exhaust port. It was on purpose, and that retroactively makes A New Hope awesome.
Yes. But see, that is absolutely – see, the thing is like – I appreciate this movie so much more because it adds depth, it adds characters, it adds story, it adds new people into that universe that support the original thing that I loved.
So good.
So you go deeper into that story, and I love when you have, you know, myth building and you know, story building and world building and universe. I mean, universe building, I mean, the whole movie is jumping from planet to planet to planet.
Mm-hmm.
You're introducing planet. I mean, it starts out, but that's one of the things I kind of had a little bit of an issue with. Not in a bad way.
It was very fast in the beginning.
Yes, it felt a little. It felt like it depleted it and muddled it. It muddied it up just a little bit.
See, I didn't think the beginning was very fast. I thought that
it was
kind of
like,
dragged
boom,
a little
planet,
bit.
Boom, planet. Boom, planet. This and this. Now, granted, it didn't. It wasn't unnecessary, except for Cassian, who I think that little plot where he which the doctor and the I told you Walrus, you know, Walrus face,
Pondababa.
Yeah.
So
great.
That whole thing, I feel like that little scene, that whole scene was done just to have those two characters in there.
Yes. Yeah, it was
and
purely
I'm fine
a part
of that. I'm fine with that, but I felt like that jump to that planet for that scene.
That happened on Jeddah. They were already there.
Yeah, they were
the planet
Jeddah.
You were talking about is that Guardians of the Galaxy-esque type midpoint where he was trying to get the information from that guy he later killed.
Yeah. Because then he kind of turned and just took him out right after he took out the stormtroopers, which I was kind of surprised that he did that.
That felt right out of Rebels, you know, just this Imperial occupied place where anytime you turn a corner, there's going to be stormtroopers you've got to answer to, and what are we going to do?
Yeah, well, okay. and he acted on the moment.
The first moment that literally took my breath away was Tarkin. Oh my god! When I saw the reflection, I thought that's all. That's all we're going to get.
I thought we were going to get like Revenge of the Sith, like the back shot.
Yes,
right. That's all I thought. We're going to just see the back of him and a reflection in the window, and holy hell, he's a main character, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is this is amazing."
I didn't gasp. I didn't make a sound. I did something in between. It was like a. I think I made that sound audibly in the theater.
Well, the thing is, I was with the family. I was with Sonia and whatnot, and I'm like, oh, and she's like, I don't know who that is. I don't know. I'm like, oh my god, he's dead. He's dead.
The
actor's dead.
Like, I need you to leave. You need to go.
I was just like, I stood up and like, somebody fucking knows who this is, right? But it just blew me away. The minute I saw Peter Cushion, I was like, holy crap, this is amazing.
See, they prepped me for that with Dr. Evazan and Pondababa, a.k.a. Walrusman and his friend. Right. All these little things, I'm like, oh, I know who they are. I know their names. Tarkin?
Yeah, right. But that's the thing. And did you also notice that a lot of the casting, I mean, that's, you know, the casting was like slightly younger versions of the people we saw in New Hope.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. The casting was amazing.
But the thing is, though, it's so closely aligned with New Hope. It's like there's not enough time. There's like weeks that pass between this movie and A New Hope.
Yeah.
It's not years. It's not months. It's like it's not even maybe not even a week.
I would argue like less than a day because the Vader's going to track that ship. He's going to hop in the Death Star. And
I'm telling you, it's like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's got to be 5 minutes.
Oh god, it's so good.
But Tarkin. Granted, okay, so I saw it on IMAX.
Me too.
IMAX. That experience was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was like I'm really good, and I've always had a problem with when I look at an image, I analyze and I can pick out. So Tarkin was fantastic, but at the same time, it's like you could see the CG. It was like it would.
No.
That's the thing.
No. I shut it off.
That's virtual reality because you know Peter Cushing died in 1994. Imagine if you knew nothing about Star Wars and you saw this movie for the first time, would that have gotten you?
I could still tell it was CG.
No.
I can tell a CG movement because of the translucency of the skin, because the way it moves, the way it reacts. Now, don't take this away from me. They did a fantastic job.
Yeah, no,
they did.
No.
They absolutely did.
But sometimes in the movements, it would melt like a realistic image, like it was a real person. And then sometimes it would catch, and then it would give a little bit of that I'm CG.
Well, see, I love how they
it was still well done for somebody.
Talking about CG, if you noticed when Phantom Menace first came out, they tried to do Yoda as a puppet again, and that failed horribly.
That was so bad.
But now, if you watch it again, Yoda is now CG, and he looks amazing.
They took that Jedi holocron,
but
with the puppet Yoda, the young puppet, and they went, I don't know what happened to that.
He's but that's the thing. He's an alien, so we don't know what he's supposed to look like.
Oh,
Tarkin, human being,
Yoda.
We know. And there's always a problem with CG characters with like dead eyes. We can't really replicate that.
It's the eyes. It's the eyes that won't always do it.
The actor they cast, you know, underneath him, they did a blend so that for the most part, the eyes are real. The actress who plays Leia at the end, you know, they
use. Oh my god!
It's just this is
now,
probably the best.
Leia was again. That was actually, I think Leia looked worse than Tarkin. Leia immediately, I was like, that is all CG.
See, I wouldn't.
And granted,
I agree,
but I can still tell.
Use the word worse. It just was not as good.
And I don't mean worse in a bad way. I mean, okay, so it
like
was
we got a taste of this earlier this year with Captain America Civil War with young Robert Downey Jr. And I was amazed.
But see, what they do with those is that company that does those, they actually go back and they take pieces of old films that they were in and they use that to render the younger versions of them and they overlay it. They did it with Michael Douglas and Ant-Man.
Yep.
I mean, they took him from Wall Street? Was it Wall Street? What was the movie? I think that was the movie that he had done. But I think that was the time that they wanted him to look in.
Sure.
That was amazing. That looked like it was him. That looked real.
See, this was a bold move on Rogue One's part because with Ant-Man, it was a quick scene. By the time you realize, wow, how'd they get Michael Douglas Young? That scene is gone and you don't see it again for the rest of the movie. Whereas Tarkin keeps coming back. He's got lines. He's got gravitas, and that just makes sense because this man, as you see in A New Hope, he's going to be very important before he gets too cocky and doesn't take the escape shuttle out.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was so great to be able to see him. You know, I mean, we see him in Star Wars Rebels. He's in that show.
Yes.
And, I mean, you get to see the conniving, the evil, you know, the how you know, controlling he is of that. He is like, he's the force to be reckoned with kind of behind everything. And he'll make those calls with just cold calculating, you know, details. But, and just see that just build and kind of that character kind of fall into that same mold. It's just really neat. Like I said, you're getting more depth.
This is raising issues with the acting community as far as digital likeness and are we going to lose role to this?
Rights.
But the thing with this is, if Tarkin had not been in it or had been in it just minorly, we as the fans, we as Star Trek and Star Wars and just sci-fi geeks, it could be like, hey, come on, man, Tarkin should have been in it, and we would have complained the other way. So I'm completely happy.
Star Trek Beyond. I mean, that they could have continued. They didn't have to kill off the other version of Spock. You know, they could have continued to use a CG likeness of him, but they didn't. You know, they opted to go with letting him pass, and that's how the character, you know, goes on.
One Spock in the universe is enough, but we'll get to that in another episode.
We don't have to get into Star Trek now. Try to keep it,
try to keep this Rogue One.
Because this could go really off the rails.
Oh my God, yes. Well, I mean, talking about like the CGI element, though. I mean, we compare. Let's compare, you know, Tarkin now to, say, Tron. They were doing a young version of
Flynn.
Bridges. Flynn, yeah. Is it Jeff Bridges?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was the same. Yeah. That was the same technology.
It looked good, but not great.
Yeah, it looked very.
But again, you're kind of overlaying on top of that original. You're still overlaying on that actor. You have that person's face to overlay that on. Whereas Tarkin was completely generated.
Yeah, it had to be.
And that movie was also forgivable. I mean, the technology wasn't where it is now, but that's also forgivable there because you're in the computer. You're in a digital universe there. So you could, you know, you can explain away why he doesn't look perfect because, oh, hey, we're
on a computer. Not at the beginning. At the beginning, he was actually young Kevin Flynn. And there was, you know, before he disappeared. But anyway, back to Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Rogue One.
One thing that I loved, a detail that they matched, if you remember, in the original Star Wars, Vader's helmet had red lenses.
Yes.
Which they went back to for this, which I appreciated. It's a little detail I dug.
I very much appreciate that. I'm looking at it, and it was just, it was amazing. You know.
Oh, I loved it, the tank. When they first introduced Vader without his uniform on.
Yes.
Oh,
he was in the Bacta tank.
Yeah. That was, I loved
because
it.
Because that was a thing that they were calling to, like, all beforehand. It was, everybody was like, who's in the Bacta tank? Is it the Emperor? Is it Vader? Is it da-da-da-da-da?
And Rob, they have confirmed that, yes, that is Mustafar.
Okay, good. Yes.
That's Vader's castle on Mustafar.
I was like, is he on Mustafar? Because Mustafar is where he lost his limbs. That's where he fought Obi-Wan. That's where everything went down.
The volcano.
Maybe he goes super depressing
because it feeds the dark side. It feeds his anger. It feeds his rage. And I mean, why not? And that, but to see a live action Sith temple, you know, pull in, and you know, Krennic lands in his transport, and to see that Sith, I was like. Mm-hmm. I lost track of how many times I audibly gasped or made a sound. Normally, when I go watch a movie, I go by myself, and I'm sitting there, I'm watching it, and I get through, and I'm like, oh, you know, I saw Doctor Strange. Nothing audible. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. But this movie, there were so many times I was like, oh, wait. And there's a dude sitting next to me, and I had to talk to somebody. I had to say, but is that this? And he's like, yeah, that's that. And I was like, I'm so glad this dude's on board with what I'm doing.
I mean, well,
what I was going to say is, and this is as far as sort of people who are listening to us, one of the things they need to understand at this point is that we all went to see it, and none of us have actually spoken about it to each other yet.
Right.
This is something we planned this. We decided that we were going to do this podcast thing. We've been planning this forever.
Yeah.
But this is actually the first time we've actually had this opportunity. So, but what people need to understand is that the three of us have actually not spoken a word of Rogue One to each other, other than holy shit, I think was the.
But here's the thing. We've been
saving it because after I saw it, I immediately Facebooked Rob and I just said, in the words of Windows from Fanboys, "Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god!"
And then my response was, "I am one with the Force." The forces
would be
yes, but that's the thing. So, but what's going to happen? You know, we're talking about our high points. We're talking about the points that we want to hit. So we can backtrack and we can come back to some of the stuff to fill in the things like you know the cast and the characters and the addition.
Sure.
Like Jen Erso, big fan. Admit,
I dug her.
I dug her. But the whole, I mean, let's be honest, Vader. I mean, holy shit, Vader. Since I've been a kid, Vader has been. That's been my thing, and it's like, God, just to see it, you know, especially after the final episode of season two of of Star Wars Rebels. I'm going to tell you that is some of the best, most fantastic Star Wars storytelling I've seen to date. And Rogue One just added to that. Because when Ahsoka Tano slices his mask and you actually see Anakin and you hear Anakin's voice from the Clone Wars show melded in with James Earl Jones's voice. Holy shit. It's like at that exact moment, Darth Vader's Padawan, who was Anakin Skywalker's Padawan, sees who Vader is for the first time and knows.
And then the season ends and you're like, oh, come on. Oh.
Ahsoka's alive. I'm still saying Ahsoka's alive. But anyway, but that's the thing. It's like Vader. I mean, just to see, you know, see him on Mustafar, see him there with the Imperial Guards, standing to the sides of the Bacta tank, you see him being pulled up, limbs missing, not in the suit. As we've the only time we've seen that before was one when he was being put in the suit in Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
The other time was in Empire when he was in the isolation
without his helmet.
Isolation.
Well, that's the thing. We only see him without the helmet.
Being lowered on.
Right.
But I mean that whole thing. I mean. It was just him when Krennic, you know, Orson Krennic walks in and he's having the words with him trying to state. And I'm like, I don't know how far this is going to go for you, dude. I don't know if you've actually ever talked to Vader before, but this is probably not going to go the way that you expect.
Let's talk about Vader for a minute, because
the cocky
attitude. When we get introduced to Vader for the first time back in 1977, the minute you see him, he's killing people. He's choking out guys. He is a villain. He is the man, like, he is the person that the good guys have to beat. Okay, that doesn't happen. And as we've grown up, we've followed the arc of Anakin Skywalker from being a good guy to falling and his eventual redemption. Now that we're getting a little taste of badass Vader, we love it. Like, that last 90 seconds of a film where he's just going through that hallway,
Dude, when he stands there and the door comes up and he's standing there and you hear
now,
and the saber comes out, I was like, oh shit.
Let's think about this for a second. Now let's step outside of our geekdom. Let's step outside of, like, you know, I own a replica of Vader's lightsaber. I've got Vader's helmet. Yep. I'm a Vader fan.
Right.
But let's step back for a second. We are so enamored of pretty much the galaxy's greatest villain, an evil man, like, regardless that we know he goes back to the light side. That's like saying, remember, brain freeze. Who's the guy from Cuba, the dictator that just recently died?
Castro.
Mm-hmm. Remember Castro when he was young and he subjugated those rebels and the firing squad? Like, we're constantly rooting for this bad guy.
I know, but the thing is, we know how the bad guy turns out.
But we didn't.
But there's something about him that even as a kid, I was like, this dude's a badass, but at the same time, it's not that I'm relating to. I'm relating to just kind of what he is, but you can tell that there was always conflict. There was always conflict in him, and you can see the battle going on, even. You know, he kind of did things on his own terms, but even when he was, like, with the Emperor, you could kind of see, like,
See, I feel they only introduced that in Jedi, because in Star Wars, he's choking out people. He's, like, he's the bad guy.
So when he's on deck, I mean, he's kind of – you could tell he's actually subjugated kind of to lost his name.
Yeah,
Tarkin. Yeah, he's constantly behind Tarkin. Constantly, never in front of, always behind. It's the visualization that he's not in charge.
And that's the thing. Right. It's like, all right, they're the bad guys, like Tarkin and all the Imperial hierarchy, which they're always British, so the British are the bad guys.
That's true. It's true.
They're like your evil boss. They're like, ugh, this freaking guy. And you're kind of, you like him.
Well, Vader was British.
But when they go down, they deserved.
Vader was British.
Yeah, the actual guy that
Sebastian
played.
Shaw.
Yeah.
David
Prowse.
David Prowse was Vader. And actually, I have actually watched a documentary on David Prowse and the whole thing with Vader. And the thing that, and I only say that because I saw it recently, and he was kind of left out of the whole reveal with the face And he wasn't aware of it. He didn't know about it. And he didn't find out that Sebastian Shaw was going to be playing the unmasked Vader until it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the problems that happened with that was because David Prowse was looked at as by the directors, the producers, stuff like that, as a blabbermouth. He would sit down with the press and kind of reveal some stuff. Well, come to find out, and in this documentary, they reveal it, after 1976, was it 70? 76 was the first Star Wars when it released.
77.
Okay, 77. So I thought they would re-release in 77. I thought it came out.
New Hope was 77.
Yeah, May 77.
Okay, so they have that in there. So he's actually in an interview and makes a quite elaborate, it turned out to be guess, but he says something like, wouldn't it be fantastic if you've come to find out that Luke Skywalker was the son of Darth Vader, da-da-da-da, and you go back and you read this. And then suddenly Empire comes along, and after that interview in which he says that, way before Empire is even conceived or even written, they include that note in there that he is Luke's father, which nobody knew up until that time. And they kept that information from him so he wouldn't blab, because they thought that he was blabbing information to the press and leaking information to the press, which is why he started to fall out of favor. And by the time you got to the third movie, I don't know if it was second unit director of the movie was starting to not include him in anything. He said it was a very tense time for him because he wasn't able to find out any information, and then come to find out Sebastian Shaw is now the face of Vader when he's been playing it the entire time. And then not only that, they voice it over, they dub it over with James Earl Jones.
But to be fair, did you ever see the footage with David Prowse's voice?
Yes, and he is actually awful. Almost spot awful. On with Vader's voice.
No way.
No, hold on. I'm saying this right now. Currently, they actually did. They actually shot. If you go back, it's actually on Netflix right now. It's called I Am Your Father. Go back and watch it. At that time, no, he wasn't. His voice was not. But now, his voice, his cadence, he says a couple of lines in there, and he almost sounds just like Vader does with James Earl Jones.
But with a British accent.
Right.
I am thrilled to death that James Earl Jones is still around and was able to lend his voice once again to Vader, because that completed the package.
Because
did.
There is nothing better than James Earl Jones' voice as Vader.
No.
When Disney money got him to come back and do the voice in Star Wars Rebels, I about lost it.
Oh yeah.
He did Rebels
talking,
as well.
He did.
That's James Earl Jones.
Well, even in the cartoon, I don't think it's made its way to Rebels yet, but in Clone Wars, even Liam Neeson came back for like a throwaway line of Qui-Gon's ghost.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Which, by the way, I think he should have survived that saber shot through the the torso. But that's
if
just
Darth
me.
Maul could survive getting cut in half,
Which, by the way, I called that way in advance. Because it cauterizes him. Nothing fell out.
Right,
it cauterizes
it
as it goes through. I was like, that dude lived, and he's got the Force.
We're actually going to get back to your particular predictions with another character we love next year with episode 8.
Yes.
But
I do need to go out. I think I need like a solitary block of time to explain my idea with that. Anyway, let's get back to Rogue One.
That's going to be a separate. That's Rob Buchsar, a Three Geek Senate story, and that'll just be your theory of this one issue.
It's a twisted theory, yes. But I think it could work, I'm telling you. I think it could work. I'm calling it. I called it the moment after I saw it.
Now,
anyway,
we got a lot of Death Star in this one, which I think is cool because we spent more time. Like back in New Hope, you have this big thing. It took them years to build. And just like in Clerks, Kevin Smith's Clerks, they said, okay, you know, they built this thing and a bunch of rebels come along and blow it up. And, you know, it's only filled with Imperial dignitaries and stormtroopers, so they deserved it. But we finally get to see, and I love how retro everything looked.
Yeah.
All the displays, everything felt like, this belongs. They didn't try to modern it up too much.
I'm going to tell you, there's a moment with the Death Star. It was one of my verbal holy shit moments. When they're like, sir, there's something large coming out of hyperspace. I lost my shit. Because at that moment, I realized the Death Star can travel at hyperspace.
Oh, yeah.
I did not realize that until that moment, because when you watch A New Hope and it's the Death Star is coming in to take out Yavin 4, it's coming around the sun, it's creeping. You'd think that the whole time it's like it's just been kind of meandering through space.
It would be very hard to subjugate a galaxy if it just ran on impulse power.
Right,
but that's the thing. But I understand that. But I mean, it's like, okay, so you can send things out from the space. It's a base that can travel. And granted, when you're in space, you're in a vacuum lock. If you're going realistic and you have no friction or anything like that, you can travel at thousands of miles per hour. I get it. But the fact that this thing that you've never seen travel jumps like the Millennium Falcon into hyperspace.
I'm glad they didn't show it.
And comes out of hyperspace. That is a holy shit moment.
I'm definitely glad they didn't show it, because to see the Death Star traveling in hyperspace would have felt weird. But just the fact that they're like you said, something's coming out of hyperspace, and you turn around and
and
there it is.
I was like, it goes into hyperspace. I'm a 40-year-old man going, this thing travels in hyperspace. Oh, my God.
Hey, happy birthday, really by the way. You got Rogue One for your birthday. This was amazing.
I did. Every year I get a Star Wars movie for my birthday. Last year, the next one's in May. I got The Force Awakens. My birthday is December 19th.
Yeah.
I got it on December 17th. Close enough. Thank you.
Right. You'll take it.
Isn't the next one May 2018?
They're doing them.
It's coming out
in
December. December 2017 is going to be episode 8.
I'm thinking of Han Solo.
Han Solo is set to start filming in February of 2017.
That'll be between 8 and 9. You'll get that in December.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Yes. I saw a thing recently.
Unless they're bumping the schedule up,
they might be, because I saw a sort of teaser poster stating May 2018.
Maybe, because May used to be the traditional
month
for the movies.
Oh, really?
And it wasn't until The Force Awakens that they captured the December because of the push. They had problems filming. One, because the Millennium Falcon tried to kill
Harrison Ford.
Let's not get into – I'm not going to get in deviating to this and one of my reasons for my theory, but that was the reason for the bump.
Right.
And in addition to that, it also broke records as far as money-making. So December is a huge time for movies now. So now that Lucas is no longer at the helm and Disney's holding the reins, they're going to say, yeah, May was nice, but December, money.
Well, see, that's the sweet spot, because you had in the early the early 2000s, you had the Lord of the Rings movies.
Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
Those held – yeah, you had
– Harry Potter.
December movies were for – the Christmas movie season was for Lord of the Rings. You had those consecutively, and then there was a gap.
Harry Potter movies.
Yep. And then you came back and you had the Hobbit movies. They all occupied that December release. And they did fantastic. So this fills that void.
You gave Dolby a sock. You gave Dolby a movie for Christmas.
Dolby is free.
So, all right. Now,
My elf on the shelf. Dolby is my elf on the shelf.
The Death Star shows up and that space battle starts. That's when I started doing those. Like, I was almost hyperventilating. I'm like, red leader, gold leader,
blue leader. That's really when I actually teared up. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say it right now. When I get overexcited and overjoyed on something, it just suddenly I'm like, and it's like, I just can't believe I'm seeing it. So they come out of hyperspace over Scarif, where the Imperial base is at, and they come out of hyperspace right in the Imperial fleet. And I was like, holy shit. And, now General Raddus?
Yeah.
Mon
Calamari.
Mon Calamari. I was going to say Calamari, and I was like, that's backwards.
The Red Lobster and the biscuits.
But now he's blue.
And the biscuit chips.
Now he's kind of like a bluish-purple thing. But the he did a fantastic job filling that slot that since we did lose the voice of Akbar.
Yeah, General Akbar.
Last year. I think they did I think they kind of did that and filled the void with a new character.
Well, it's good to see a new character, because again, then where was he in the battle of Endor? And in such a large universe to have the same five people, which is why this was so refreshing, because this wasn't just, all right, Han and Luke and Leia have to save the universe. And believe me, I love it, but there's such a rich tapestry. Like yes. we're exploring it in Rebels right now. So all the stories they're telling, constantly add to this lexicon we have, and it's great. It's good to see other people doing things.
Yeah, like I said, I'm like a fan of the diversity of the group of people. Like you didn't have, and I'm gonna touch on this. It's like I'm always a fan of when you include multiple races of people, genders and stuff like that, and you don't just constantly fall on this trope of, you know, the white guy being the hero. You know, you had these multiple groups of people. You know, you had a woman that was in the lead, which is great. I mean, I'm a big fan. I've always liked the characters that are like that, like Princess Leia. I mean, it's always great to see, you know, somebody's like that. It's like you don't expect to take control, and they take control. And it's
like the Alien movies.
Yes, Ripley. Yeah. That is Ripley. A fantastic. I mean, she was fantastic. I love that character.
I think she was pretty much one of the first times a female actually took a lead in that sort of capacity.
Right.
I think Sigourney Weaver just led the way. Yeah.
And I don't get it. I don't understand the problem.
I don't get it.
All right, but so we're talking. While we're talking new additions,
yes,
K2.
K2's fantastic.
K2 was amazing.
I love K2.
You mean Sheldon Cooper?
I'm going to be honest. If you make any Big Bang Theory references, like more than just a name, I'm not going to know it because I refuse to watch that show.
Good.
I don't find it funny.
It's not anymore. But it used to have its geek moments, which is what was cool.
I used to just like seeing the Daleks on the shelf and stuff. Yeah. But anyway.
But K2, anyway. Voiced by K2. Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk just
absolutely refreshing. Loved it. Yes. I loved the way the character just kind of moved in and just the attitude of the robot. I've always enjoyed the Imperial or the Sith robots because they are just so snarky and they're just so conniving. And it's just something delightfully enjoyable about a snarky robot. That's just me.
Well, I liked it because it was basically the new 3PO. You know, it had the personality, but 3PO was very sort of...
He was very proper. Very
he was
proper.
Yeah. He was Felix Unger. He was, you know, complainy. He's funny. You like him. But he needed R2 to be...
Yes, that's the thing. They needed the two of those sort of played off each other. It worked with K2... It was just him.
Yeah.
And he didn't need a counterpart. No.
He could hold the stage. He walked around. He decided to leave the ship. And then it's like, everyone's getting fired on. I think I'll go wait in the ship.
Right.
Yeah. or when she shoots the other Imperial droid. He's like, wait, did you not know that was me?
Yeah. But he immediately steps into place like he's taking them as prisoner. And he Cassian. Yeah, I was going to say Calrissian. I was like, that's wrong. Cassian, when he backslaps him, and he's like, and if you do anything, there's a fresh one there for you. And I was like, that's just a fantastic, I mean, it's a ridiculous line, but it's ad-libbing by a droid just on the spur of the moment to make it.
And he never seems to know what, like, I'm taking these prisoners to prison. Like,
he's just flying by the seat of his pants. He's just making shit up as he goes, kind of like we're doing right now.
Pretty much what we do on a daily basis. But yeah,
pretty much. And the cool thing about it, and again, we didn't spend a lot of time with these characters, but I felt like, even though we don't know their diverse backstories, this is a war movie. We lost pretty much all the characters that we were introduced to, and I was saddened commensurately with each one, each loss. Like, when K2 went down, it's like, all right, here's a droid who chose to sacrifice himself to save these people on some impossible task. And... Yeah, I teared up at that. I'm like,
for a moment, I was like, I didn't know how they were going to go with the movie because the movie, you're so used to a Star Wars movie where you don't, and this is also going to feed into my theory that we haven't yet to touch on. This movie, they're not coming back.
No, like, that's right.
They're dead. There is no doubt that person's dead.
As soon as they touch that planet, you know that they're not making it work.
That's
the
thing. So K2 was the first to go down. I was like, he's a main character. I was like, surely he can't die.
Right,
and
but he has to.
Fuck, K2 died.
See, that's the thing. We've been raised and used to that back door. Get some, like, all right, at the end of Star Trek Nemesis, it's like, oh my god, we just lost Data. Oh, that's okay, we got a backup Data. Like,
B4.
Yeah.
But see, that's kind of where I felt with the K2 when he was in there, and he was getting when he took the other Imperial droid, and he was getting the maps of the facility. I was like, maybe he's uploading himself and making a backup.
What, like Spock?
And he's kind of like reprogramming this other
Remember.
Droid. And I was like, well, when he died, and I even made the comment, I was like, maybe fingers crossed that he uploaded himself to that other Imperial droid.
And then that, and then that droid blows up too.
Right, and I was like, "Well, that, there goes that."
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the thing. It's like K2 was just R2-D2, absolutely my favorite. K2, very close. But that's the thing. It's like, and I made this comment to somebody. I think if you took R2 and you translated it to English, there would be a lot of the same things.
Oh yeah. Well, R2 is
maybe he's snarky. R2.
Very much, and but see, here's the thing I love about R2. R2 is the only being droid thing, a character in all of the Star Wars stuff that knows exactly everything that's going on. Because R2 has never been wiped. R2 has been there from the beginning of the Skywalker saga.
Hmm.
He knows everything, and he has saved everybody's ass. More than anybody else in that entire saga.
And that's why it was nice to see that little 2-second cameo of them at the hangar going, oh, what's going on? Because you know they've got to be there. They're about to go with Captain Antilles and make their historic trip.
That's right.
Their Polar Veers ride.
By the way, I did see the picture that had Chopper in it. Chopper.
Yeah, I heard it was there.
See, I saw that. Now, here's the thing. We've seen a ship that looks like the Ghost. We've seen a droid that looks like Chopper. Now, we've seen droids that look like 3PO. I'm all for the Rebels crossover, but you're telling me that company only made one droid that looks like that.
Right.
But Chopper was a remnant of the Clone Wars. If you remember, he was in control in the Clone Wars, and he came to that. He was a... I can't remember what type of robot or what kind of droid he was.
No, I'm just saying, as far as like we're taking a screen grab and showing something in the corner, like, hey, there's a droid that's the same model as his.
They did make the nod to it, and they made, and there was actually a nod to what's her name, Hera,
General Syndulla. Yep.
Yes, they made that. Now you don't know if that's her or if that's her father, but
it was a nice reference.
Those story timelines are about right now they're about 3 years separate, which I read that earlier today. So Rebels is right now currently about 3 years off from the events of Rogue One. But they got with David Filoni, who is the showrunner for Star Wars Rebels, and he actually said that they got with him before they made Rogue One to make sure that those characters, those few characters, were still going to be in it. Now, that doesn't allude to Kanan, and that doesn't allude to, I'm losing his name, Ezra.
Ezra Bridger.
We don't know how those two are going to turn out, which, by the way, if they happen to make it there, that would still mean that there were Jedi around when Luke came back in, too, and Obi-Wan came back up. Anyway, that's just super cool to me. I like that little back thing that they're still Jedi.
And speaking of Jedi, it was a little member berry, but I thought it was done well. You see Bail Organa step forward out of the shadows. I was like, oh, it's Bail! And then he says, well, I'm going to go on a mission. I've got a friend. He's been in hiding. I'm like, oh, he's talking about Obi-Wan.
But then he talks about going back to Alderaan, and I was like, no, don't go back.
You're going to die.
It's going to be a very bad day.
You're going to die.
You can't tell him. You can't tell him.
No, I can't have any information about the future.
Marty, it's about your kids.
Bail, you got to come back with me. Where? Back to
assholes?
Yavin. I refuse to accept the responsibilities.
God. Yeah, but so much. Yeah, anyway.
This is heavy.
And that's, there's that word again. Is there something wrong with the Earth's gravitational pull in the future?
It's just so heavy.
And that's the thing. With just a phrase, he goes, I must return to Alderaan.
Right.
We know. It's pulling on us. I'm like, oh.
That's the thing.
You're going to die.
You touched on in the beginning, you know, them talking about it being fan service and, you know, whatever. Yeah, I think that they did those things because this is a movie that is for everybody. It is all important. But this is a movie that does feed the fans. It does do that. And I mean,
I think it does it correctly. I think it does it well.
And it's not over. it gave us a lot of new things, but at the same time, it gave us a little glimpse and a little bit more of the backstory of the things that we
like,
love.
Like, this seemed to serve the plot, whereas in The Force Awakens, it's like, hey, here's that prop that we use. Remember this? Like,
right.
And I didn't like the way they did it.
It's like, well, hold on, guys. You realize that that was when Luke was fighting Vader and his hand was attached to that lightsaber the last time we saw it. Like, how did that come to be? And I had actually read somewhere some cockamamie
theory.
Yeah, some ridiculous theory that like they were supposed to show like Luke's hand still grasping the lightsaber floating through space.
Oh my god!
And I'm like, but somebody had to find it. How
you're trying now, to st- you're trying to steer supposed- you're trying hard to steer to your Han theory. I
no,
know it.
I'm not. Yeah. No, I'm,
detour,
I'm not.
Detour, man.
That was not me. That wasn't me. But here's the thing also, is we start getting into kyber crystals and how the kyber crystals are actually communicate with force-strong individuals. Kyber. But then we're going to start really going off into getting off of the Rogue One subject. And this is all stuff that we can definitely hit on later on.
Well, but this is what I loved about Donnie Yen's character.
That's what I was going to say. Oh. Chirrut Imwe. Chirrut Imwe was...
He's not a Jedi, but
fantastic.
He's someone who, you know...
I think he was
a defender of the temple, so he was
a little force
Jedi
sensitive.
Adjacent.
Yes, he's force sensitive, but definitely not a wielder.
The best, oh my god, he was like, so you think that K2 was like some sort of like comic relief element to it.
Right.
This guy was fantastic. Like when they put the hood on him, he's like, really,
right.
Guys,
are
I'm blind.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
It's the thing, it's like, yeah, like I said, it took me a minute and I really wanted to learn his, name. Like I'm going to be honest. Names are it's a problem for me to retain names immediately. And I make an effort. I really do. Like when something makes an impact on me. And I did. I wanted to know. Chirrut Imwe, just being that character's name, like I wanted to know I want to know more about him.
Mm.
Because he is a guardian. And the fact that we go to Jedha, which is the homeworld of the Jedi.
Mm.
But I think that's actually changed. I don't think it was in the expanded universe before the Disney buyout. I think it was something else. I've read somewhere that it was a different planet. But
it seems
Jedha,
like it is now.
Jedha,
they really did. They talked about the holy city, the last remnants of the Jedi. You saw that fallen statue,
which
very,
was
very Lord of the Rings-esque.
Like, wow, we're finally getting to see where the Jedi came from. I would love to see more about that planet, but the fact that the Kyber crystals. When they started touching on that, I was like, oh, they're actually calling them by name. They're actually calling them what they are. That's the thing that communicates the most with the Jedi.
The Kyber crystal.
And the interesting thing about – now, here's something that was actually in a book that was written. It was it was about Ahsoka Tano. It came out maybe – it was earlier this year. I cannot remember the name of the book, but I haven't read it. But apparently it's touched on the fact that the only reason – the reason that when a Sith has a lightsaber, the saber is red, because Sith are not allowed to – they're not supposed to be able to communicate with the Kyber crystals. The Kyber crystal actually bleeds when a Sith gets – a hold of a Kyber crystal, which is why every Sith saber is red. It has something to do with the fact that they are almost sentient.
Oh, don't that's almost going into midichlorian territory.
but that's the thing. That's the thing that's been fantastic is every Kyber crystal has a unique bond with its Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kyber crystal speaks to that. And they've even talked about that even in the Clone Wars and in Star Wars Rebels. When they talked about going and when they in the Clone Wars, when they sent the younglings, there was a whole episode that concentrated on that, and they went to go find their Kyber crystals. They actually spoke individually to those younglings. But again, I'm going.
And we didn't see a lightsaber ignite until like 2 hours and 10 minutes into the movie,
right,
when Vader sparked his one lightsaber, and the whole theater lost their minds.
Yes. And then he lights that, and then he just starts force grabbing and force choking.
Oh, he's just on a mission, isn't he?
See, that's the thing. It's like I read the Vader comic, and I'm kind of like the comic book really, which has ended now, sadly. Really went a little bit past A New Hope. But in that, he actually has, it touches on more of him and his agenda. And he's actually got, like, a submission that he's been trying to find like Luke Skywalker and all this before Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
But that's deviating off into that, and he's kind of doing this under the Emperor's nose.
Yeah, there's always been ancillary tales, like, you know, the two of the video games. What is it? The Force Unleashed. About Vader's apprentice. And he's always tried to find someone to kill the Emperor for him because he probably wasn't strong enough to do it himself.
But that was the whole thing about the Sith. You know, you have the Master and you have the apprentice. Two Sith, no more, no less.
But that's what I liked about Rogue One, because we didn't have to get bogged down with too much of that. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, we had all the elements we loved and recognized, and Chirrut was that reminder that, yes, the Jedi are in this universe, but you know, we don't have one with us right now, so don't worry.
But
yeah, we're good.
And his companion. Now, I've got to ask about this.
Human
anybody
Chewbacca.
Else? Well, I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, is this guy a Mandalorian?
Mandalorian? He's not Mandalorian.
Yeah.
He is actually, I think he's a character from the Clone Wars cartoon.
Right.
Him and Saul Guerrera. God, what's his name?
Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker. God. Ghost Dog. That's the movie
Last King of Scotland.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's another one. But that character that was with Chirrut.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a supporting, but you could tell that the camaraderie and the friendship that they had, they always had each other's back. And I don't know, and I've read that, you know, somewhere on there, and whatever it is, but I don't think that they went too deep into it. No pun intended. The fact that they may have been two gay characters in the Star Wars universe, but without calling them that.
Right.
And if they did that, I mean, great, but it's the same thing with, you just see these two characters that support each other regardless of what's going on.
Well, see, that
but you could just say the same about Han and Chewie then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's right. But that's the thing. It's like they've just got that relationship.
See, I like that's what I liked about Star Wars when I was a kid, because there wasn't any consideration of, oh, there's not enough women in the cast. Oh, there's not enough minorities in the cast. It's just good and evil. Let's shoot some guns. Let's fly some planes.
Right.
Yeah. And when you're a kid, that's the world. That's the story. You don't differentiate race, color, creed like we do now. This was, and Rogue One brought me back to that. Here's all these guys saying, you know what? We're going to team up. We're going to do this. It's a suicide mission. Let's go.
Right.
And I was
back
on
in 77.
But that's the thing. It's like, would we have had that if Jen didn't take the lead? Jen took the lead. She made that decision. She's like, this is going to happen.
Cassian rounded up the Merry Men, though.
But she was going to go regardless.
And she would have gotten shot down the minute she got there.
Understandably, but again, that's supporting.
It's like that Family Guy thing when Dak is like, hey, I feel like I can take on the whole Empire.
The whole thing myself.
Guys, Dak's got this. Go ahead. Boom.
He goes out and jumps in
there.
Time
to suck some Dak. Yeah.
So fantastic. Speaking of stuff that didn't happen in this movie, I think I mentioned this to you, Rob. Mm-hmm. Half of my favorite lines and half of the things I expected to see from the trailers were not in the movie.
Yeah.
And we know there were reshoots, but go watch the trailers again. There's some great lines. When Jin goes out onto that gantry to realign the thing,
a
TIE fighter comes down.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, that's the thing. It's like, I was like, oh, that's going to be a cool scene.
That line, we're a rebellion. Rebel.
Rebel.
But then, like, there's a scene when they're on Scarif, and her and Cassian are running across the beach.
Yep, gone.
And you see her holding
the hard drive.
The drive. That never happened because they never get out. They never get out of the tower.
You also see those stormtroopers walking through that clear water. You see all these different shots that could have been just shot for the trailer, but.
Right,
I can't wait till the Blu-ray comes out now because I want to see those deleted scenes.
I was going to say, I don't know, maybe there'll be the extended edition.
I've got to go back and watch the movie again. I've kind of spaced it. I wanted to go back immediately the next day, but I was like, I'm going to oversaturate myself. I need to give myself time to marinate.
That and
come back.
And
then 19
bucks for IMAX was kind of a kick in the
wallet.
I'll
probably go
it was
see
worth
it. Maybe it's standard def this time.
Yeah.
But $20 shot at the movie, because every time there's a Star Wars release, I always got the get. I always end up with it. Let's talk about. I've got beta tapes. I've got VHS tapes. I've got three different versions of VHS. I've actually got the original Star Wars on VHS with no additions. like no special edition,
yes,
no anything. Got the hologram on the cover of the box.
And you see when the TIE Fighters go across the screen, there's that box that travels along with them because they hadn't got the keying down yet.
Yep.
But it's like I want Yub Nub. I want that at the end of my
Jedi. Yep.
Jedi.
You know, this is a divergence, but it always bothered me that Wedge brought his helmet to the party at Endor. It's like, dude, leave that in the car. What are you doing?
Why are you carrying that?
Is Ewok Village a bad neighborhood? Do you not want to leave it in the car? They're going to steal your radio and your helmet?
Well, you can tell the Ewoks are a little unruly.
Yep.
But anyway, so I'm trying to think about where we kind of are in the
too much nub nub.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. But like as far as the covering of the Rogue One and kind of the depth, I know there's plenty of stuff that I saw that wanting to, and I'm trying to go back to it because we're like jumping into this and this and this and this, and I'm like, there were points that I wanted to bring up, and now
I've been doing a lot of other things that we love about it. Is there anything that let's look at it objectively? Is there anything that you're like, this is bothering me, Paul?
Yeah.
What do you think?
They didn't have the scrolling at the beginning.
That's called bookends, guys. We started at the beginning and at the end. This has been Three Geeks Edit.
That's a callback right there.
Oh dear.
It's foreshadowing.
Anything other than that?
I don't think so. Mm. I mean, I honestly just sat there and just geeked out the entire time.
Can we talk about how cool the Death Troopers are?
Yeah. Cool are the Death Troopers?
But here's the thing. But that's the fact. So I'm trying to figure out the Death Troopers. They come in. They're clearly taller than your regular Stormtroopers.
And they can actually hit a target.
Right.
Yes.
Leaner build than...
That was weird.
Oh, that's something I do want to talk about.
Yeah.
Hold on. So that's something that came to me earlier today. But so then none of them spoke English. If you listen...
Yeah, I noticed
that. All the chatter was in a different language. So what race are they?
Oh.
That was interesting.
What alien? They clearly had to be something different. I want to know what's going on there. I want to know if they're a specific breed.
I mean, that's probably something that Krennic had a key to, because they were his personal Death Guard. Mm-hmm. And once he went, and again, of course, we're looking at this retroactively, but it's not like you ever see a Death Trooper again.
Correct. Yeah. Well, you do see them in that movie, and that movie alone, it's a standalone thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
If these guys were the elite of the elite,
right?
They would have been in Vader's guard. They would have been in the 501st, et cetera, et cetera.
See, even with Vader, the Emperor, he had the Emperor, the Royal Guards, the Red Guards.
Yeah.
They weren't Death Troopers, though.
Correct.
Were they?
Correct. You didn't have.
But you're right, though. He would if they were part of the Empire, then Vader would have had his own. Death Troopers. In fact, they would have all probably had he's probably bred them or something. He's probably something like the clone element of it, where they've actually been specifically bred for that one purpose.
That would make sense, and that's
special
went
forces.
Wrong.
Yeah, the special forces. It's like sending Schwarzenegger in to get the Predator. You've got that elite team, and once this guy's gone.
That, and it's the program is too expensive to keep up. Hey,
that
it was great. We've only got five of them. They're the super soldiers.
Yeah.
The serum ran out.
They're the Captain Americas. They're the super soldiers.
They're the Captain Coruscant, which you saw briefly, I think it looked like Coruscant, in the flashback when Krennic and Orson were talking in kind of midway when Jenna's having one of her flashbacks.
Thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That looked like Coruscant, which was nice, because, again, for a planet that should be so important, we see so little of it.
Yeah.
At least in our Star Wars. I kind of don't think of the prequels.
But, we're referring back to with the whole, just Coruscant being in the kind of the core of the prequels?
New Hope element of it.
Okay, yeah, because it definitely wasn't. But, I mean, that was the thing with Coruscant. It was just a city that was a planet. It was
when we were introduced in New Hope to this whole thing, I mean, they just referred to it briefly. They're like, oh, the Emperor has dispensed with the Senate. It's like, whoa, without the Senate, how are we going to keep the local systems online? And, when you're 3 years old, you don't get things like this. And just, again, because we're kids, we don't care about the politics. We care about the lasers and the ships and that stuff.
But see, yeah. Even from a kid, though, the one thing that stuck in my head is when they would refer to the Clone Wars, I kept wanting to imagine. I was like, what are the Clone Wars? I was like, I know what mm-hmm. clones are. I was like, I want to know what these clones – did they fight a bunch of clones? Was there a clone outbreak? I wanted to know more about that. Now so when they know. Did dive into the whole idea of what the Clone Wars were, I was like, all right, this is pretty cool. But the whole idea with Coruscant being where the Jedi Order was in the temple, and you had all the holocrons and everything there. But the whole thing about and I've read this recently – is apparently – the Jedi Temple on Coruscant was actually built over a Sith temple, which actually resided on Coruscant before that, which is actually what caused Yoda to not be able to foresee the future, because the Sith temple was interfering with the Force and not in him being able to foresee. I don't know. But then I'm like, well, what happens when he leaves the planet? Well, when he went to Kashyyyk and he helped the Wookiees, why wasn't he able to see it then? But, you know... That's the whole thing. It's like, how strong of a role did that play, if that was a real thing?
I mean, it's almost like we got to take it pulling back to the paranormal, like, and we talk about psychics. They're not all knowing. So Yoda knows a lot, but he's not. If he knew everything, he wouldn't need the council.
Right.
Wouldn't
they
need to do everything. He's just like,
feel.
Huh.
Like that possible whole, futures.
That whole, and again, the prequels did a lot of disservice to the franchise as much as it did some good things.
I really
things.
Wish
that whole bringing
came into existence.
That whole bringing balance to the Force. It's like, whoa, wait a minute, Jedi, you guys might not want this because you're in control right now. So, bringing balance, that means wiping all of you guys out. So I wouldn't try to bring balance just yet.
I wouldn't be applauding that quite yet.
No. It's like, once you're all dead and there's two of you and two of them, now we've got balance. Congratulations. How's it feel?
And they look at Anakin. They're like, that kid could bring balance to the Force. Put him in a cage.
Kill him.
Yeah, immediately. But
into exile you must go.
But so...
We're all going to start doing our Wookiee impressions and Yoda impressions.
But it's just going to be whatever happens. You're just going to have to deal with it. Just if you're impressed. All you can do is Imperial forces. So, I mean, that's all that matters. Your British accent.
Well, and that's a good thing, too. I feel like when I was a kid, the Empire was the coolest. Vader was the coolest.
Was.
The uniforms.
No.
If there was Transformers, I loved the Decepticons. Cobra was awesome with G.I. Joe.
I've always loved the villains.
But now that I'm older, I'm like, these guys have to be stopped.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is
I've
with the good
had
guys.
For villains and like their machines and what they, you know, what they do, but it's what they represent. Like, when every time I play a video game and I've got the choice between the light side and the dark side,
I always
end up going to the light side. I can't help it. I'm like, I don't want to kill all these people.
You know, I just did that with Fallout. I mean, Fallout 4, I got the Nuka World DLC, and there's two ways you can go with that. You can complete this the good way or the evil way. And the evil way, you can be in charge of all the raiders, and you can take out all the camps you've set up in the Commonwealth. You can go in there and just take them all back and take them all and make them all raiders. Or you can just kill the raiders that are in Nuka World. And I was like, I knew it was there, but I couldn't find the good ending, how to start the good ending. I was like, damn, I don't want to be the bad guy. I don't want to be the king of the raiders.
Like Knights of the Old Republic.
You could choose to be good or bad, and depending on your actions, you either get more evil or more good. And
right.
I'm like, I've got to be good. I'm going to be Boy Scout on this one.
Right. That's what I did with Knights of the Old Republic. I played through it twice. I played through it full light side and full dark side, and I had a problem with that, because I started going through, I was like, I kind of, and I would start doing it, and I would waver, and I found myself in a morality duel. I was like, if I was really in this, I was like, how would I go about it? And I was like, it's a video game.
I'd be the
game.
Worst bad guy ever.
Right. But then
I'd get stuck at a crappy job, have to pay my taxes, and not go on any adventures.
But then I went full dark side, and I was kind of like, I'm kind of enjoying all the wiping out of people getting in my way.
I like the robots and the uniforms and everything, but I'd be wearing all that while
the bad
sitting
guys
at a
are
desk.
The best.
I'd be on the end of the phone or something trying to do tech support dressed as a freaking bad guy. You know, it's just you can just imagine Vader. You know, actually, I think I saw one of these
dude
spacing. I need you to work on Saturday,
dude. We would be Finn from The Force Awakens. It's like, you were you were a garbage guy? Yeah. You were in sanitation?
I feel like that's where that's going to fall in.
That's, yeah.
But okay, so I'm going to jump back to something real quick when I wanted to touch on before I forget about it. So we're talking about the Stormtroopers and their horrible aim, which they have alluded to. They've alluded to it in Star Wars Rebels when God, what's his name? The last clone trooper.
Oh, Captain Rex.
Captain Rex. And he even alludes to how horrible they are and how they can't shoot and how they can't. And I was like, that's fantastic. They actually acknowledge it in canon. But I started to think about it. I was like, okay.
They're
so
supposed to be crack shots, though.
Yeah.
When we first hear about them, Obi-Wan says only Imperial Stormtroopers are so precise.
Right. That's what I was getting ready to touch on. So, and this kind of leads into other theories that I have, and I'm not going to dive into those quite yet. But, so when they're shooting at the people that are the main characters of the movie, those main characters are what?
Important to the franchise and can't be killed because there's no more movies.
Okay.
They are force strong.
Right.
What did Chirrut Imwe do as he was walking to turn on the transmission tower?
Mm-hmm. I'm with the force.
I am one with the force. The force is with me. I am one with the force. The force. Da 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 da. All the way through the thing, never once being hit.
Mm-hmm.
You had a force. Now you take somebody that is an actual force wielder that doesn't know their abilities. What happens? Now you have somebody that's deflecting, or they're not deflecting, but they're avoiding shots because of their connection with the Force. The Force is actually getting them through that situation.
Well,
Leia was Force strong. Luke was
Solo wasn't.
That's one of the things I haven't touched on yet.
We're going to have to do a whole episode because I know like Rob's just been wanting to say it for the past hour and 10 minutes.
I'm not going to say it, but I'm not going to say it because – It would chew up a lot of time because it's of the different paths it goes down. Again, all possibilities.
All connected.
Right. But that's the thing. It's like, so I came to that realization today. I was like, you have these main characters. The ones that you always see that are getting shot at were Force strong or with somebody that is Force strong.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting theory explain something that is pretty much just storytelling 101 because in every franchise, the good guys make it through somehow, and that's why they're the heroes.
Right,
because
and I get that.
They defy the odds. Like,
right.
I just went to a gun range for the first time last month, and I now can watch action movies a little better because I'm taking time to aim. And there's nobody shooting back at me, and I still can't hit where I think I should be hitting. And meanwhile, you're running around shooting guns and wondering why they're not hitting it. Like, I give the Stormtroopers a lot more leeway now.
That's weird, because the first time I shot a gun, I thought I could be like Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon.
Dude, that's exactly what
I
thought. No joke.
I was trying to do the smiley face. I tried. First time I shot a gun was actually like this time last year. It was the first time I actually shot a gun. So it's about a year ago now. I haven't shot one since. A year ago, I stood there on the button, and I just kept letting it go further and further back. You know, full-on Lethal Weapon.
I've still never shot a real gun. I've still never shot a gun, so I have no...
well, you know,
I have nothing
Paul and I can go William Tell on you, and the way guns are, we will miss you.
Yes. Oh, no, we would.
But just because I'm strong with the Force, so
that must
be
it.
Well, the Force is—I believe in the Force, and the Force is with me.
I'm with the Force. The Force is with me.
Right, absolutely.
Hey, speaking of that, what about that weird squid creature that was supposed to make the pilot go mad, and kind of didn't? But
he did. But he got brought back because if you remember when Chirrut was sitting,
he was messed up a little bit.
In the prison
there,
cell.
But he didn't get pulled back. He said you could. He said, but the people that have been affected by it do tend to lose their mind. But he did. He was out of it. I think that because if you remember when he said something to him, he goes, "Are you? What is it? The Imperial?
I'm a pilot."
But he had to be reminded of who he was, and being reminded who he was pulled him back from that brink of losing.
Right.
If he wouldn't have been reminded, he would have been lost, I think. That's just the way that I took it.
Well, he only said that some people lose their minds.
Right.
So, I mean, it was covered.
I think he was a good addition to the...
I like that character. I mean, I yeah. we didn't get into any of them too deeply, but neither did we in A New Hope. It's like, hey, we find this farm boy. Okay, we're going on an adventure. Oh, now we got a scoundrel and a princess. And we didn't go too deep into their characters. We just knew they were the heroes.
Right. Yes. And that's all we needed to know.
Yep.
And he was unique. He had a unique look. He had the goggles. He had the suit. That was his thing. That was his look. And the fact that he was kind of fast talking and quick on his feet as far as like what to he's the one that came up with the whole Rogue One moniker. And the call sign for Rogue One.
And he was also looking for that redemption too, because a lot of the people working for the Empire are just doing it as a means to an end. And the fact that he was told that this is how I can make everything right, that this is a guy trying to do the right thing.
Correct. Right.
And that speaks to a lot of people.
But we wouldn't have Rogue Two if we didn't have Rogue One.
Oh, speaking of call signs, nice little Red Five nod there.
Yeah, oh man.
Oh yeah.
I actually read that they actually got footage that wasn't used in the original Star Wars movie, and that stuff was the scenes that they inserted into this.
Digitally remastered and everything.
Yeah, and that's they took cool, it man. And that was actual on the stuff that didn't use in the flick, and they put it in this movie. And I was
nice.
That is fantastic, because when you saw him, I was like, that guy didn't age a bit, and I was like, wait a minute.
Oh yeah, that was like, totally right.
Yeah,
because
Falcon was legit.
Because
that
guy actually passed away. He passed away this year, I think, because we lost him and the voice of
Akbar,
yeah.
I mean, for the most part, those scenes just look cut in, but I was fine with that because, again, it cemented you into the fact that, A New Hope is about to happen. Of course these guys are going to be in the fleet.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But they're the top pilots. Of course they will.
It was just I think it was done well. Did we have a Porkins? Was there a Porkins in there? Please tell
me.
No, I couldn't recall. I was like, was there a Porkins in that?
Porkins was working at the mess hall at Yavin 4. He was at the commissary,
he was
getting
everyone working at the mess hall.
All their lunches ready.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, I think
you eat other people's sandwiches. Lunches.
Jen would have made it off if there was a little Porkins.
Actually, maybe Porkins wasn't quite so porked yet. Maybe the story in between Rogue One and A New Hope is how he got his extra force.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
Had we just had Porkins and Dax.
We're talking about the force of gravity, friction. Which one are we talking about?
Actually, I read somewhere that there was a nod to Wedge, but I didn't pick up on it, and I didn't see him at all.
I didn't either. The one nod that I did see multiple times, and we touched on it a little bit earlier in the tie back to Rebels, was I did see the ghost multiple times in the space, in the battle in space. Over
so
Scarab.
Did I. I mean,
I was watching. I actually tracked it, and I saw it on the left side of the screen because it was an IMAX screen, like we all experienced.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen, turning my head, going, but that was cool.
See, I dug that, but then I had to go back to my air of skepticism, like, all right, that company probably built more than one of that ship,
it has been acknowledged. That was the ghost.
Oh, that was the ghost? Okay,
yes.
Cool. I dig
it's
it.
Been, like I said, they acknowledge, Filoni acknowledged that was the ghost, and that was Chopper, and that they were referring to Hera.
That's cool. All right, I dig that then.
Yes.
See, I miss out on this because I've not watched the animated series.
Rebels, because when it first came out, I remember writing Rob and I said, dude, this feels like Star Wars because the music, they use orchestration and themes from the original. The stormtroopers look the way they should again, and we're getting back to our Star Wars.
And that's the thing. It's like when you take – people don't understand how important audio cues – music and voices are to suddenly pulling you into nostalgic feel.
Right.
And when they took that, when Disney knew what they were doing, they said, when I talk about Disney money, I'm talking about somebody that went and they dug up those sounds and they added those sounds from that universe the old way. And even what's the classic scream?
That's a Wilhelm scream.
Yes. That was even in there a couple of times. I heard it when Stormtroopers. And so just those nuances really added to it. I was afraid it was going to be Aladdin mixed with Star Wars because I'm going to be honest, Ezra looks a lot like Aladdin.
He does.
He looks a lot like Aladdin. And I was afraid in the first episode, I'm watching it and suddenly I sunk in and the sound effects and the music and
see,
then
that,
the look.
That got me like, too. I didn't know the Clone Wars was ending. So when it ended, I'm like, oh, all right, I guess that's it. And when Rebels came out, I said, oh, another show so soon. And I wasn't planning on watching it either because I don't know who these characters are. And oh, the music. Oh, hey, Stormtroopers. Oh, a mouse droid. Oh, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah, we just need more gonk droids. I'm telling you right now.
I didn't see a damn gonk anywhere. Gonk. Did I miss it? Did I miss the gonk? I didn't see it.
We saw the Death Star droid a couple of times.
We saw the mouse droids.
Yeah,
I saw those.
The mouse droids. You saw the Imperial probe droid in the background.
Oh, I missed that one.
I think I might have missed that.
Oh, yeah. He's like 2 seconds when they first get to Jeddah and they're walking. In the background, you see one kind of just chilling out.
Fantastic was to actually see the AT-ST going through the streets of Jeddah.
Oh, dude. Wait, so what was the one the AT-AT, the AT-AT. When that
it was AT-ACT. That was an upgraded version. It was a predecessor of the AT-AT. It had a cargo thing that sat in the middle of the body that was removed instead of it being
troop transport
utilitarian
But I'm talking about on the oh my god, the planet, the
Jeddah,
the archive. Yeah. No
Jeddah.
Archive.
Are you
Is
talking
that
about
Jeddah? The archive planet? Okay.
Oh, you mean
Scarif. Thank you. Right, when they're you've got the special force team, they're in the forests, they're in the woods, they're taking them, and all of a sudden you see this giant foot coming in, and
when Chirrut does that Yoda move, and he's like,
yeah,
oh, run, we have to get out of here.
Yeah,
it's the sound.
It was the sound.
The ka-chunk. The sound, definite AT-AT sound as it's going.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, even though the story, okay, as far as, you know, the story itself had already been written. You know, when we watched A New Hope, when we watched that, you know, I wasn't even alive in 77, so I'm not as old as you two.
Oh, wow.
But
you're getting, shut up, twat.
But ultimately, the New Hope had already written that story. Had already, you know, the Rogue One story was already done. You know, when they did A New Hope, they did Empire and they did Jedi and all that. You know, the story was already there, and all that had to be done, it had to be told. And I think that's what they did,
and I
think they did it very well.
Yeah, ultimately, like I said, they gave us new characters, they gave us depth. You know, when they took from Galen Erso going to Jen Erso. And then her coming and being pulled in the story, and then that ties in Saul Guerrera. Saul Guerrera ties in the Clone Wars era stuff into the Star Wars Rebels type era, which, by the way, Saul Guerrera is coming to Star Wars Rebels.
I saw that.
And in the second half of the season. Looking forward to that. So then you get that, and then you have Orson Krennic, who then, you know, him and Erso were creators of the Death Star and using the Kyber crystals for the laser.
See, now it seems like the one speed bump I saw, it's like, okay, we saw the Death Star plans back in Attack of the Clones when they were escaping Geonosis. And actually, I know that, that the season, the mid-season premiere of Rebels is going to go back to Geonosis and maybe fill in some of those gaps. But it's almost like here, those guys said, you could build this. And Krennic and Erso had to figure out, well, okay, how are we going to do this?
See, I kind of want to know more of that story. And actually,
there's a book called Catalyst.
Catalyst, and that's what I do. I do want to go back and read that, and that's one of my goals for the beginning of 2017. I want to get that book.
So now, here we go. We're coming up on an hour and a half. So
okay,
we're gonna round up this session of the Senate. So let's have some closing remarks on Rogue One. Paul, take it away. Rogue One.
I'm gonna go see it again. I have to. It's there's bits I've missed, I'm sure of it, you know, and think it's one of those movies that we're going to be able to watch over and over, and we're going to pick up another thing, we're going to pick up something else, we're going to pick up another thing, and it's all just everything about that movie was the same feels I got from when I first watched New Hope. So I mean, I loved it.
So that's thumbs up from Paul.
Total thumbs up.
Now, for me, I'm looking at this from a business aspect. Rogue One had a lot riding on it as far as the anthology portion of the Star Wars franchise, because we're definitely going to have saga movies. They're going to crank those out at, you know, whatever pace they want to. But now this opens up the door. Yeah, the Han Solo anthology is definite go. You know, they've been talking about a Boba Fett one. The Obi-Wan one is being pushed back because
he
still
get an Obi-Wan movie.
He still might have importance or at least some kind of story in the saga.
Obi-Wan, I'm telling you right now, Obi-Wan was one of the biggest badasses in that story.
As long as they don't do what they did with the X-Men and then, like, you know, say that they're going to be doing all these origin stories and origin this and origin that, and yet only one of them really works, so they're just going to milk that one. You know? And we all know, but, you know. But
that's another podcast, too, because we've got to talk about Logan. But I feel that Rogue One, in addition to being the box of feels that we were all waiting for, they did a great job with story. Mm-hmm. They did a great job with effects. I left, again, just being able to enjoy a movie and not picking it apart going, well, this was dumb. Like, I enjoyed myself in the theater again, and I've been missing that for a very long time. So Rogue One, thumbs up from this senator. Rob, closing statement.
I've got to absolutely emphatically agree. Because you've got the movie and you've got the original trilogy, but then you've got a lot of the new. You've got new things coming into it. You're filling in gaps. You're adding depth and layers. You're giving us more of what we love. And is it crowd service? Yes, but it's also smart, and it's also just giving the fans that have been with it for almost 40 years, you know, just kind of a little bit more. It's kind of giving them a reward for just being that fan. And is that a bad thing? No, because it makes us want more out of it.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, it gave us great characters. It gave us great new locations and planets. It gave us new mythology. Another thing, and I'm just going to touch on this real quick because I didn't mention it earlier, is the fact that they do mention the Wills in this.
Yes.
And the Guardians of the Wills. Now, the Wills were originally, they were saying that was, the Wills was supposed to be what the race that Yoda is. And they are the ones that were supposed to be, you know, and this is all original. This is like in concept.
Yeah, wasn't it Anakin Starkiller and the Book of the Wills or something?
Right.
Was the original screenplay?
As it was something by the Book of the Wills, yeah. And they alluded to that. So is Yoda one of the Wills, and are the Wills the ones that are basically the storytellers and the keepers? Because they say that all of Star Wars is kind of told from the legends or the writings of the Wills.
Don't you mean a Will?
A Will. It's what I call Will Wheaton.
Why are you saying it like that? Why are you putting so much emphasis on the H?
Say cool.
Cool whip.
Cool whip.
But, you know, kind of touching that, it's like, yes, it kind of gave us little things like that, but it gave us huge spectacles. It gave us fantastic moments from people that we weren't, you know, unassuming heroes, unassuming new fan favorites. Even though those favorites don't exist forthcoming, you can revisit those in Star Wars Rebels. You have plenty of time to have some of those characters be reintroduced and get more backstory. I think that we'll be able to enjoy more of those characters and kind of see them coming up through the ranks. And Vader. I mean, we finally get a touch on more live-action Vader. Like I said, I read the comic. I would love to have seen a standalone Vader movie so you can kind of see more of that stuff, because he does have his own droids, which are evil versions of R2 and C-3PO, which are 000 and BT.
Anything is possible now that
they
this has done well.
People. But that's the thing. It's like, yeah, it is all possible. But definitely huge thumbs up. Any movie that makes me enjoy being in the theater and just the story, and like you said, Brian, not picking it apart, not going this is bad, this is good, this is conflicting with it. I just was along for the ride.
We've gotten jaded as we've gotten older. Ride. We've gotten a little more sophisticated. In this one, I was a kid again, and I dug it.
Yeah, just enjoy it for what it was. Enjoy it for what it was.
It was the best, and I give me more Star Wars like this any day.
So it sounds like the Senate is in agreement. We are all thumbs up for Rogue One. And with that, we put a period on this session of Three Geeks Senate. My name is Brian J. Cano.
I'm Paul Bradford.
I'm Robert Buxar.
And we're going to be back whenever we have something geek to say, and we will at length. So for those of you who have listened to us for the past hour and a half, thank you, and we will see you on the next session. Good night, everyone.
Good night.